Coming up on Tech News Today, why Steve Ballmer's leaving Microsoft and who might replace him, Amazon testing a wireless service, and Apple gets mappy. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, August 23rd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy iPhone and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Alex Semple, temporary Jason for today.
Yeah, Jason's off. Iaz is off. But we got an all-star cast to help bring you the top tech stories of the news, starting with the top 10 of the day in the news feeds. I thought the internet felt exploding when Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer announced his retirement from Microsoft within the next 12 months. Ballmer will step down when a new CEO has been found. A special committee to find a replacement will be led by independent board director John Thompson and include Chairman Bill Gates. Ballmer said Microsoft is transitioning into a devices and services company. And Ballmer said in his goodbye email, quote, "We need a CEO who will be here longer term for this new direction."
Well, in other news, Apple's lost as hell, and it's not going to take it anymore, so it bought another map app. This time, the company is called Embark, and it builds free transit apps to help smartphone users navigate public transportation. Seems to be something that people like to do. Former Wall Street reporter Jessica Lessen says her sources tell her the company plans to directly integrate Embark's technology into Apple Maps.
Bloomberg reports Amazon tested a wireless network on a spectrum owned by Globalstar Satellite. The test took place in Cupertino, California, near Amazon's Lab 126, which designs and engineers Kindle devices. Globalstar has applied to the FCC to transition 80% of their satellite spectrum to terrestrial low power service, or TLPS, which could serve as an alternative to Wi-Fi.
Lenovo just wants you to be happy. So the company will start offering start menus on Windows 8 PCs. But this isn't the whole pseudo start icon thing coming to Windows 8.1. No, this is the actual start menu replacement software, sort of, coming with all new Lenovo Windows PCs. Lenovo partnered with San Diego, California-based Sweet Labs to bundle its pokey start menu software into new units, along with Sweet Labs' own App Store.
Google bought patents from technology manufacturer Foxconn for technology to generate, quote, a virtual image and is superimposed on a real-world view. Bloomberg and Financial Times reported earlier this year that the wearable glasses will be manufactured by Foxconn in California, which gives Google the chance to say the device was made in the USA.
Police affidavits related to the raid on Kim.com's mansion point to New Zealand police and spy agencies tapping directly into United States surveillance systems such as Prism to capture email and other traffic. Keith Ng made the discovery on his blog called On Point that the Organized and Financial Crime Agency New Zealand, or OFCANS, requested assistance from the Government Communications Security Bureau, or GCSB, the country's signals intelligence unit, which is a charge of surveilling the Pacific region under the Five Eyes Agreement.
The U.S. Department of Justice on Friday filed a revised proposal remedy for Apple in the e-book case. Proposaled is a new word that I just created. Apple was found guilty in July of conspiring with publishers to set e-book prices. DOJ still wants Apple to drop in-app purchasing restrictions for competitors, as well as restrict publishers from using agency pricing for up to 5 years. The new proposal reduces the injunction term from 10 years to 5 and staggers negotiation with publishers and asked for an external monitor. The Department of Justice included a 2010 email from Steve Jobs in their proposal as further evidence that Apple instituted in-app purchasing restrictions as retaliation against Amazon.
Pandora just had a healthy quarter and wants to celebrate. Pandora executives said in an earnings call yesterday that they will lift the 40-hour monthly cap on free mobile listening that was instated back in February. And this is actually the second time Pandora has instituted a free cap and then lifted it again It last lifted the cap in September 2011. So you can stream your way to shapely hips and thighs.
I will. Google launched the latest beta. That'll be weird. Google launched the latest beta of Chrome for desktop and Android today. This release is the first Chrome for Android to support WebGL by default. A number of new swipe gestures come along as well, like swiping horizontally across the top toolbar to switch between tabs and dragging vertically down from the toolbar to enter the tab switcher view.
The MakerBot digitizer is coming to a home office near you, if you have $1,400, that is. It'll start shipping in October. And what's special about this machine is it's designed to allow replication of objects without any need for the user to learn anything about 3D modeling software or have any special expertise. Works by pointing several lasers at an object and then detecting contours in the surface. Allows users to upload their 3D designs directly to Thingiverse, a website where 3D designs can be shared.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. Do you want the new Samsung Galaxy S4 or maybe the iPhone 5S that is purportedly coming? HTC One? Do you want to upgrade? But you're like, oh, I've got this old phone and I don't have enough cash. Well, got your solution right here. Sell the old phone on Gazelle, hassle-free, get the money, and buy the new phone. And you may say, well, now, wait a minute, Tom. How's that going to work? I don't want to be without a phone. You don't have to be. Lock in your quote. Go to gazelle.com. Tell them what kind of device you have and lock in your quote for 30 days. You've got 30 days to get your new phone. That'd last you beyond the purported September 10th announcement that's supposedly coming from Apple, or allow you to get whatever phone you want. Transfer all your data, get your new phone number over there, and then you send the old phone to Gazelle, and they'll pay you fast. They'll turn it around by check, by PayPal, or you actually get an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card. And if you're like, Tom, I want to sell a tablet, so you aren't helping me. Gazelle's now buying back a large selection of tablets. In addition to the iPad, you can now sell to Gazelle select Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, and Asus tablets. You get paid fast. You get paid in cash. Find out what your iPhone, your Samsung, and other Android smartphones are worth. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com and find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today. Do it right now. You can do it while you're listening, unless you're driving. Then wait till you get home. Gazelle.com. GAZELLE.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to gather round the round table and talk about the stories of the day, Lamar Wilson. You know him from This Week in YouTube, or maybe from his YouTube channel at Lamar Wilson, youtube.com/Lamar Wilson. How's it going, Lamar? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me here. I'm excited. Today is a big day.
Yeah, it is. We got all kinds of stuff. And of course, it's Friday, which means Len Peralta, internet cartoonist extraordinaire, is joining us to draw court sketch-like representations of Steve Ballmer.
Yes, no, I'm really looking forward to doing it. I know we have a lot to talk about, so let's get right into it.
Yeah, let's get into it. And talking about Steve Ballmer retiring, earlier today, we did a Twit Live special with Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com and Paul Thurrott, both co-hosts of Windows Weekly. And Paul's joining us now to talk about this a little bit. Paul from winsupersite.com. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Absolutely.
So Microsoft Steve Ballmer, we heard in the news views, retiring. He's been CEO since January of 2000. He's been at Microsoft since 1980. He was employee 30. And he said, my original thoughts on timing would have had my retirement happen in the middle of our company's transformation to a device and services company. We need a CEO who will be here longer term for this new direction. So what does this mean? Why is Steve Ballmer stepping down and why is he doing it like this?
That's the big question. I'm not really sure we could answer either one of those, unfortunately. I mean, there's so many questions and so few answers here. I mean, he, in his letter to employees, he explained why now, which is what you just stepped through a little bit there, that this transition is going to take a certain amount of time, and his plan was not to be around for all of that. But as to the, why and what he might do after Microsoft, who Microsoft might find to replace him, those are all open questions.
We talked a little bit this morning in the special about the oddity of him not saying what he's going to do next. There's no talk of him getting a board seat or staying on it as an advisor of any kind. And we don't have any hint, do we?
No. And when you look back in time, when Bill Gates was CEO for Microsoft for such a long period of time, Ballmer was, for most of that time, the very clear number two and was always the heir apparent. And as we move forward in time to Ballmer's tenure as CEO, There was never the, never once did we have that person. There were a couple of actually, you know, actually now now that I've said that, there were a couple of people who came on temporarily who I thought maybe would have risen into the ranks and become that person, but it never really materialized. And after Steve Sinofsky left last year, that was probably the last one where a lot of people had expected him to take over. But yeah, there's no clear heir, and they're searching for one now.
No, no chance of Bill Gates coming back. We can be safely say that. Probably not likely that Sinofsky would come back. Special committee led by John Thompson. He's the board's lead independent board of directors director. Chairman Bill Gates on that committee. Chuck Noske and Steve Lusko. They've hired Heidrick and Struggles International, the recruiting firm.
which is a great name. Fun name to say.
If you had to make a guess on the best bet, who do you think will probably step into this role?
Oh, I hate to even guess at that. I mean, Mary Jo pointed out a couple people earlier who she thought that would be great choices, and I agree with both of those. So one of them would be Tony Bates, who most recently ran Skype, and the other one is Satya Nadella, who runs the service and servers and tools business at Microsoft. I actually think they would almost be better off going with someone external to the company, but based on the way they made this announcement, I don't actually see that happening.
It does seem like, and we talked about this a lot in the special, Microsoft is under the influence of Bill Gates still as chairman of the board, and he's got to sign off on whoever the replacement is. So they're going to stick with this devices and services strategy that Ballmer put into place. It sort of hogties a new CEO a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say that Gates kind of hogtied Ballmer as well when you think about it. I mean, his influence over the company was obviously pretty vast. Although, you know, again, to an outsider, it seems like Gates was involved very heavily in his outside work and was not really involved in the day-to-day stuff at Microsoft. But the fact that he's doing what he's doing right now and is involved in the search for the next CEO kind of shows you they want some form of a succession that makes sense given the history of the company.
Do you think there's any we talked about some wild conspiracy theories. Is there anything nefarious behind here? I know we have a story today that Microsoft is under investigation for bribery allegations in Russia and Pakistan. Right. Probably has nothing to do with this. A lot of people are joking that Ballmer came on about the rise of Windows XP. Windows XP and support April 8th, 2014. We just really don't know what's going on here.
No, I like the Area 51 stuff, but I think that, you know, the bribery thing, Microsoft is a ginormous company. This kind of stuff has happened in various locales around the world in the past. I mean, obviously, that has nothing to do with it. XP obviously has nothing to do with it. But, you know, I do wonder about timing. And, of course, I'm, you know, human like anyone else, I do wonder about these weird coincidences. I think that it's possible that he intended to do this last year, but he wanted to make sure that Steven Sinofsky was out of the way so that he wouldn't have a chance of taking over as CEO, which a lot of people assumed he was going to.
Do we think it's actually going to take him 12 months to leave? I think by saying, I will leave within 1 year of today, it really sort of is designed to take the drama out of the whole thing.
Yep.
You know, we've got a whole year to expect him to go, but I wonder if he'll actually be here next summer.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take that long. I think sometimes just by publicly stating something, you're giving the impetus for it to happen, you know, that they could have done this privately, but then maybe they would have taken their time. Now the eyes of the world are going to be on Microsoft. Shareholders are looking at Microsoft, and I think it may drive them to make that decision a little more quickly. So I don't think he'll be out before, you know, the holidays or whatever, but I don't think he's going to be here, 11 months from now.
A stock price had a big jump when this was announced, up 8%. It's now, right now, as we're recording, about 6.84%. So it's pulling back a little bit. But
it's
generally,
it's too bad he couldn't leave every day.
Right. You know. The stock market and the general analyst reaction is this is a good thing.
Well, I think the problem for Microsoft over the past 10 years, well, that's not fair to say. One of the problems for Microsoft over the past 10 years has been that stock price. And it's hard for the company to do something that will move the stock. We talked earlier about this notion that Microsoft every so often will come out with some new version of Windows and some new version of Office and some new version of Server. And those products are interesting and they're very predictable and they're very safe and they generate a lot of revenues and that's great. But that's not the type of thing that drives stock prices up. And so I think the stock price change that you're seeing today is A, temporary, but is B, more just chained to this notion that Microsoft is finally doing something major, you know, good or bad. Like this is a big change, and this big change is not the type of thing we associate with Microsoft.
Can you see them really streamlining behind the whole Xbox line, and maybe they just need a younger, hipper guy to kind of take that to the next generation. Is that kind of thinking probably of Ballmer?
I hope so. And that's the theory behind like a person like Tony Bates, who is younger and represents this kind of cloud first mentality. I do think they need new blood. And that's the thing. I think ideally Microsoft actually takes someone from outside the company. I just don't see that happening. So hopefully they do go in that direction. I hope it's not Ben Affleck, by the way.
Quite a coincidence that he was announced as the new Batman, same time Ballmer. I mean, have you seen them in the same room? I don't know.
That's a good point.
That is just not okay.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Weird feelings.
Mary Jo Foley, co-host of Windows Weekly with Paul, has an interview with Steve Ballmer that she had today. So look for that at allaboutmicrosoft.com or ZDNet.com. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned this morning when we were talking to her that he sounded kind of maudlin about the whole thing. Which is to be expected, of course.
Yeah, it's a transition. And, you know, he's been part of Microsoft for all of his adult life. You know, he's been at the company for 30 years and has been CEO for 12, 13 years. I can't do basic math. The fact that he has no idea what he's going to do post-Microsoft kind of tells you where his head's at. I mean, I really, that part at least is honest. I really think he doesn't even know how to approach a post-Microsoft world. So that's going to be a big change for him.
I think we need a pool to start a pool. We can take Mary Jo's list of possible candidates from her column this morning and start placing wagers. Are you in?
Yeah, it's like a Deadpool, but in reverse.
It's a rejuvenation pool? Back to life pool? I don't know.
A promotion pool.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll be working on this story for quite a while. So, keep an eye on winsupersite.com. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks, Paul.
Absolutely. And windowsweeklytwit.tv/WW. I'm sure they'll be talking about it still next week on that episode as well. Let's get into some other stories. Jessica Lessen over at her new blog. She's a former Wall Street Journal reporter, always breaking stories. That blog now has another one about Apple buying Embark, a map app.
Yeah, and it's funny because Embark I'm actually quite familiar with, because when Apple Maps first launched and everybody went, "It's awful, it's not ready for prime time," I spent a bunch of time downloading as many other map alternatives I could on my iPhone to see what was best. And Embark was one of them. What it is a variety, a suite really, of transit apps over about a dozen U.S. cities. So there's one for the BART system here in the Bay Area. There's one for the Chicago public transit line, New York, et cetera. They're all separate apps. It's not just one app. It's basically, it's geolocated based on where you live, although the team is located here in Silicon Valley, small team. And apparently, according to Lessen sources, this will directly become part of Apple Maps. So Embark's technology will just be part of Apple Maps, which is a good thing. Transit is a big part of Google Maps and a big part of what was wrong with Apple Maps, certainly from the get-go. What's interesting is that the iOS apps are still available in the App Store, although the Android apps have apparently been pulled. Alex, I don't know if you can see. This is actually a trip that I used on Embark just a few days ago when I was coming back from a trip. I was at SFO, and I had to go to my nearest BART stop.
Share it again if you can.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Where are we? I'm sharing to Marion on Studio Apple TV. You should see it.
Done. There we go.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, this is actually sort of a backwards, but if I'm going from my nearest BART station to San Francisco, I say I want to depart now, go ahead and plan my trip. You get a variety of leaving times based on when you want to leave, how much the trip is going to cost. You've got system maps. Again, I'm looking at my local BART transit situation, but you get an idea for the kind of information that you would get. This is a great app. I love it. It works really well. In fact, it works better than what the comparable apps that are made by the own public transportation systems look like. So I think this is a great get for Apple. I guess the question is, does it make more sense for Apple to buy a company like Embark rather than build it internally? I'm sure they tried. Lamar, what do you think?
I was just going to say the same thing. I think they tried it and realized, man, it'd be so much easier just to get somebody else's technology. And Apple has so much money. It's like, well, yeah, just buy it, integrate it. because that's one of the things that's just hugely missing. I don't think they thought that process out, that people actually take public transportation. So, yeah, they had to buy it. I think this is a good purchase. And I'm hoping that what they were doing was already integrating this technology, so when the announcement comes in a couple of weeks, they can just say, hey, we have transit now, that they've been already working on it.
And they're good-looking apps, right? I mean, I use the transit feature of Google Maps a lot. I've used that in New York City a ton. And I like it. It's fine. But it doesn't look as good as that. And if you can go and bring out Apple Maps and say, guess what? This is the best map for your phone for transit in the United States. That's going to be a big win to get people to pay attention to Apple Maps and see if it's improved in other ways.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mauricio Moss in chat says, this app actually doesn't work well in New York or D.C. That I haven't tried. I think it certainly works well in the area that I have used it. Maybe that has something to do with the company being based in Silicon Valley. I don't know. But I think at this point, Apple could use all the help that they can get. And this isn't the only. I mean, they've acquired quite a few companies now. They've acquired PlaySpace. They've acquired Poly9, C3 technology for that very cool flyover 3D tech that everybody forgot about, but was very, very cool when they showed it off last year. Wi-Fi Slam, Locationary, Hopstop. So this is clearly they're taking it seriously. And, you know, we've heard that, you know, Apple Maps is not as bad as it used to be. So I guess that's a good thing.
Yep. All they need to do is acquire Google and they help search. That'd be great. So get on that.
They almost have enough cash. They just need to drive down the Google price a little. Exactly. Amazon doing some interesting testing. We heard the news Fuse, a wireless network on the Globalstar spectrum. Some of you may know Globalstar. They're a satellite provision company similar to Iridium. And they took a test near Cupertino, which is also near Lab 126, Amazon's Kindle arm. Globalstar applied to FCC in November to convert 80% of their satellite spectrum to terrestrial. They want to use something called terrestrial low power service, which uses approximately 25 megahertz of their spectrum as a Wi-Fi replacement. And the cool thing about TLPS is you just need a firmware upgrade to make current 802.11 compliant devices work. So you wouldn't have to sell new hardware to people. People would just do an update and they'd be able to use this. The odd side of it is Globalstar really wants to use this as a wholesaler. They want to lease it out to enterprises. So their push is we want to make this work in congested areas and buildings where enterprise has a hard time providing Wi-Fi to their offices, et cetera. So I wouldn't see it, you know, maybe coffee shops, maybe something like that would use it. Starbucks might roll it out. I wouldn't see it as something you're going to be using a lot personally, like in your house, but you may take advantage of it when you're out and about. So what's Amazon up to? Are they going to start providing a Wi-Fi-like service, or are they going to build it into their Kindle devices, which is, you know, might be why Lab 126 is doing this test. Lamar, what's your best guess?
I'm going to say, I'm going to agree with you if you're agreeing with that notion that they're going to come up with their own wireless devices. I think, remember when Amazon had too much server space and they said, hey, let's lease it out. And now they're, you know, Netflix and so many other companies are running and depending on them. And I definitely see this happening. We need something else other than the carriers because they are horrible. So if Amazon can do this, if Google is already starting it, I say go for it. If we can get cheaper spectrums out there, I'm all for it. I'll sell my soul. I'll be the first person to test it out. I don't care about NSA. Just give me some free stuff.
Doesn't it seem like Amazon, it would make a lot more sense for Amazon to say, would you like Wi-Fi? Well, then you'll love our new Kindle. I mean, the whole thing is they want to sell the devices so that they can sell books and services and products and all that good stuff. So I think it makes more sense for them to bundle it within something that you have to buy from Amazon rather than this Starbucks Wi-Fi provided by Amazon. You're welcome. Goodwill. You know, that sounds really nice, but I don't think that makes as much sense for them as a company.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think what I guessed when I saw this is, remember, Kindle is bundled in their e-ink versions with a connection. Mm-hmm. In some cases. Now, they put a cap on those connections, but they used to sell it unlimited. So maybe Amazon's thinking, well, if we can roll out TLPS in enough places, and that's a big bet. Globalstar has to also provide the transmission of this thing. And this thing's more like Wi-Fi than it is LTE. So that's an interesting aspect of it. But maybe Amazon says, well, we'll build it in too. So we'll have an LTE radio in Kindles going forward, and we'll have the ability, we'll put the firmware in so that you can get not just Wi-Fi, but TLPS. And anywhere that Globalstar is providing this, an Amazon user will be able to log on for free, and it expands the system. And the other side of this is maybe Amazon's doing a cell phone, which we've heard lots of rumors about. Bloomberg reported that before. Did that excite you?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say a Kindle phone, as some variant, has to be coming. And then you could pretty much get internet anywhere without necessarily having to be bothered with a carrier if they do the spectrum right. And yeah, it does excite me. I'm excited that, you know, this technology is going forward. We're less dependent on the carriers. As you can see, I do not like carriers.
They don't carry so well anymore as they used to.
Who does? Is anyone out there being like, you know what is awesome? Carriers. They are just looking out for us.
Yeah,
and again, it's a little bit confusing, and it's a fine line between this, because I'm talking with Uncle Bic 2 in the chat room right now about, he's like, well, this is, sounds to me like WiMAX. There are some definite similarities in the sort of the wholesale model of this, but the difference is, while this can go 3 to 5 times the length of Wi-Fi, it's still more like Wi-Fi. It's more, at least Globalstar is positioning it as, hey, we can help you cut through the congestion and provide Wi-Fi signals to Wi-Fi devices. But who's to say Uncle Bic 2 doesn't have a point? And they start expanding it and saying, hey, it's like municipal Wi-Fi was thought to possibly be in the past, where we can just blanket coverage everywhere. And it is essentially the same as a mobile data technology. So both sides of this are intriguing. What Amazon might be doing for it with Kindle or a possible Kindle phone, what Globalstar is going to do as a service provider is interesting as well. More competition in wireless data carriage, the better. I think we all agree on that. Pandora is making things cheaper too. Lamar, you're going to like this. They're lifting the cap on free listening, Sarah.
Yeah, as I mentioned, they had a good quarter in their earnings call. They beat the street's expectations, and they said, we're going to lift the 40-hour monthly cap on free mobile listening. So that's anybody who doesn't have a Pandora One account, who doesn't pay for that. It's pretty much all of us, most of us, on free mobile listening. They had announced it back in February and pretty much said, listen, this is just one of these cost measures that we have to instate. It's going to affect a very, very, very small number of our users, because 40 hours for a lot of people is quite a bit. But it is the second time that Pandora has reversed this. They instituted a free cap, lifted it again, then instituted it again, and then lifted it. So they flip-flopped a couple times. And on the earnings call, they listed two reasons for that. They said the cap was a blunt tool for limiting usage and costs, but the company had developed better techniques like skip limits that control costs without affecting the listener experience much. So they felt like they could lift the cap again. And that also their ad business is better. So Pandora can now monetize those hours from 41 onward at a much higher rate, meaning the 41st hour. And what was interesting also is that when they said that they instituted the mobile cap, their usage dropped 10%. Now, that's kind of interesting. Obviously, you say, well, obviously they want usage to go back up 10%, although they said it's probably not going to work that way, because there are many factors that may relate to users. Users may have dropped out because they said, we got a mobile cap, don't like it anymore. They may have switched to other services. Who knows? They may have just not used Pandora anymore. But their revenue is up 50% year over year. Company says they're going to be profitable for the full year for Pandora. That's really good. What was never said, though, and I think is interesting, is this seems like something that Pandora probably looked around and said, okay, well, what are certain caps that, let's say, an iTunes radio will also not have? We're going to have to lift that, so at least we're on a level playing field with the service that hasn't launched yet, but it's going to be a direct competitor, Pandora, like no other service has been before. Lamar, do you think Pandora is sort of forced to stop capping us so that iTunes Radio looks less attractive?
Well, you stole my thing. That was what I was going to say. And you read too much into the article. No, but
Took the words right out of his mouth, Sarah.
No, absolutely. They're not stupid. They see that coming ahead on September 10th or whenever it ends up being released. And of course, it most likely will not have a cap. I used to love Pandora. I still think it has a, you know, soft spot in my heart for it. But, you know, I use Google Music now. You know, I'll try out the iTunes Radio. I think they have to stay competitive with the market. But, you know, there's a lot of Pandora lovers out there. And I think it's a service that's going to stay around. They got to stay competitive. But yeah, they knew what they were doing.
I think this is fairly transparent as a response to iTunes Radio. Pandora pays a lot of attention because I'm sure they know that a large portion of their audience comes from iOS. I'm guessing iOS users in a lot of cases. But I also think it's interesting when you think about Pandora's consistent objection to paying the higher royalty rates that they say, oh, we're making a better job of monetizing our advertisements. You know that the industry is going to leap on that and say, see, they're not having any problem making money. So there's really no reason to change any of these royalty rates at all.
Yeah. I think it's good. You know, it's good. Pandora's figuring out how to get profitable, though. That's something that, even though they've brought in so much money, paying out those royalties had always hampered the company. So they're on the right track. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many people say, ooh, iTunes Radio is so good in all the ways Pandora isn't, and you know what it's going to look like next quarter for them.
Liberation Music has sent a takedown notice to the wrong guy, and they're ending up in court. They sent a DMCA takedown to YouTube about a 2010 Lawrence Lessig lecture called Open that Lessig posted to his YouTube channel in June 2013. Now, the lecture uses snippets of a song called Listomania by Phoenix that Liberation Music holds the rights to. I like that song, too. It's a great song. Lessig and the EFF are now suing Liberation Media for violating the DMCA with an overly aggressive takedown. Lessig used a small portion of the song in his lecture, and he says, I have got a fair use defense here. It was a small enough portion that it's, you know, its use is allowed. It doesn't compete with the market for the song in any way. The lecture is an entirely new creation. I wasn't derivative of Phoenix's song. And I'm not trying to sell the lecture. It is an educational material that is available. It meets all four factors, it seems like, of fair use. The way the DMCA works, if someone believes that a copyright infringement has happened, they send a notice for takedown. If the person who is accused of infringing doesn't believe that it is infringing, they send a counter notice. And then if the original notifier says, nope, that is definitely infringement, you have to take it down, then it can be resolved in court. And that's what no one ever does, but Lessig is doing. 512F, the section of the DMCA that requires copyright owners to pay damages when they go too far in issuing a takedown. This isn't the first time it's gone to court. Lens versus Universal, the famous dancing baby case, was filed back in 2007. It's still winding its way through court. One of the problems there is Universal backed down quickly when they got the counter notice. So there's not as clear of a case here. Liberation threatened to sue Lessig if he reposted after the counter notice. And now Lessig's like, well, you have just broken 512F. I think, you know, we can all wonder what's going to happen in court, who's going to win, et cetera. But do you agree, Lamar, that this is kind of a watershed test? Even if Lessig wins, though, does that actually pave the way for somebody like you or I who doesn't have money to take people to court to make better use of fair use?
Absolutely. Because, you know, as a YouTube creator myself, I have to, you know, walk very carefully through YouTube because of this. And, you know, we deal with that with This Week in YouTube, where any one thing can take our video down. And they don't expect, they know most people are not going to challenge it in court because they can't afford to. So once they get challenged, though, like, I'm glad this guy is challenging them. You know, they may back down from that. But yeah, this is a problem because I was reading through this and he, like you said, he meets everything for fair use. And it's just not right how these companies are coming in. And what it is some of these companies, now Federation Media or whatever they call Liberation Media may have a legitimate case, but there are so many of these other companies that will just go in and just do claims just because, and will immediately take your video down. Like Google will not question it until you counter. And it's a big problem. I'm hoping that this sets a precedent for us to have a better say and our videos getting taken down before we have any kind of response to it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that this may drag out for a long time, as the previous case had. But in general, I think it's the big problem. And Lamar, I know you know this because you know a lot of other YouTubers, and people just don't understand what their rights are. fair use is a gray area. I mean, even for us, sometimes we're, you know, we have to fight to get our videos put back up after they were taken down. And in general, I think the main problem is when a large company says, hey, you can't do that. A lot of people say, oh, okay. They don't really know any better, or they don't feel that they have the might behind them to fight anybody in court. And so it ends up being a bit of a bully situation, because the larger companies, for the most part, usually know what they're getting away with and taking advantage of people. So I don't know exactly what the solution is, because YouTube isn't going to like enact some sort of a fair use school we can all graduate from and then we're all in agreement. It just doesn't work that way. So I think it's some way for the public to be more educated is the right answer, but I don't know exactly how to do that.
Yeah, it makes me wonder. Oh, go ahead, Tom.
No, go ahead, Lamar.
It makes me wonder if there's some kind of payout that happens if you get so many takedowns a month, because there's some companies who are just devoted to just taking things down, and I'm wondering what is their motivation behind it, and so there may be some behind the scenes things that are nefarious and why they're so aggressive in these takedowns. So I'm hoping a court case kind of finds that out for us.
Yeah, that's the thing is like what was it about the speech that scared everybody so much? Probably nothing. It's just like, hey, that song, you can't do that. Take it down.
I can imagine that there would be a little salivating on the part of someone in the industry if they thought they caught Lawrence Lessig, the champion of fair use and Creative Commons, violating copyright, and they could prove it. I don't think they understood, first of all, how much Lawrence Lessig knows about this area of the law and what they were doing when they decided that he had violated it. I think it may have just been a lawyer who didn't really understand the situation very much, because what they're trying to do with all these takedowns is set the limit of fair use as far out as possible so that everybody feels like they have to license works and pay the industry if they use them. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a very important case, because if Lessig wins, if it does go to court and Lessig wins, it does set a precedent. And whenever there's a precedent out there, companies just naturally become a little more conservative in how they act in a way that might violate a court case that already exists in court law. Even if there's not that much threat of somebody like me or Lamar or Sarah going out and suing somebody, it just changes the nature of things. And if you would like to understand fair use a little more and the four factors that this case shows are all in effect, go to fairuse.stanford.edu. They have an excellent description of copyright and particularly the four factors of fair use and how they play into things. Let's finish up with Google wanting to become your dictionary. They've kind of become a lot of people's spelling dictionary already.
Yeah, I mean, let's say there's a word and you sort of are like, what does it mean? Am I spelling it right? And you type it into Google search. Very often, right at the top, you get the little definition. You go, yeah, that's the word I was thinking of. Well, Google announced on a Google Plus, a blog post, that their word search results will now include not just definitions, but also synonyms for a particular word, sample sentences that the word might be used in, some description of the word's etymology. So word nerds will love this. Even it includes a chart showing how commonly the word has been used over time. A little bell curve. It's just the popular word. When did the word peak? And you can quickly translate the word into other languages. That's very helpful. I'm constantly trying to do that. Maybe I do that more than other people, but I love it. You can tap on a microphone in the search bar, if you're obviously using the mobile version, to hear the results spoken aloud. But what's interesting, and there's a bit of a lively debate happening in that original Google Plus post about this, people saying, well, where's all this information coming from? In one case, someone says, I think that's coming directly from the Oxford Dictionary, and that's all. Do you have the rights to this? Where's the credit going? And is this coming from some sort of weird data bank where we might actually get results that are not accurate in all cases? Of course, sometimes there are questions as to whether a word is officially a dictionary word or not. But in general, I think this is great. This is information I'm looking up somewhat regularly, guys, especially since I do a lot of writing. Any issues with this? Lamar, are you a word nerd as well?
I am. I used to be an elementary school teacher and heavy in the vocabulary, so the etymology and all that. I'm going to have fun with this. And it's going to kill a lot of apps. It just is. You know, even some of the free ones. There's just no incentive to use them now. And that could be scaring some of the people. It was also mentioned that this is U.S. only. And one of the comments was like, you know, the world is bigger than America, Google. And that's always one of the arguments. But yeah, they have to start somewhere. I have no problems, Tom.
Yeah, I hope they actually expand this and make it available for other languages and other parts of the world. But they're probably experimenting in the U.S. because they feel like that's the easiest market to knock off because that's where they are. I also want to know sources, though. And that that's a really good question. I'm looking at the example on Google Plus. There's the fortuitous definition, and it looks very official. But where is this coming from? You know, I think that is important, not only for me to know that I can trust it, but also to give credit if they're pulling it from some other area. Especially with the dictionary, I think that's extremely important. But that aside, that's my only big criticism of it. Otherwise, I think it's a good service. You know, helping people to be able to look up the meanings of words will help us all to have more solipsistic arguments over the semantics of what we're debating.
What?
Exactly.
What he said.
Yep. Let's move on to the calendar.
The Ryzen Edge goes into effect on Sunday, the 25th. That is their cheap phone replacement plan we've spoke about in the past. And starting next week, VMworld starts in San Francisco. It starts on Monday, the 26th, and runs through the 29th. Big, big, big to-do from VMware.
It's virtual, but they'll be there in person.
That's right.
It's always confusing. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got an email from Brian who says, in episode 380, that can't be right, you mentioned a possible future where your encrypted files are held on a cloud that's distributed among many strangers. There are two platforms that we are and we're doing this exact way, Freenet and Wuala. Wuala is a cloud storage similar to Dropbox that encrypted your files before sending them off, used to allow you to offer some sort of your hard drive space to Wuala. Then they would store encrypted files on multiple hard drives that it would always be available to the user who uploaded it. Freenet is similar, storing encrypted files on multiple computers. Nobody can get at the files on their computer. They're always available, though, when you want that file. So the concept is being played out right now. It's not perfect, but it's a promising concept.
No, those are great examples, Brian. And that is exactly what these folks are talking about is we have these nascent beginnings of the kind of internet that we're talking about. How do we make that easier? How do we make that so that you don't have to be interested? You don't even have to have a lot of tech skills to take advantage of the kinds of storage that Wuala and Freenet use. And I know probably for Brian and other folks in the audience, it doesn't seem that hard, but they want to go even farther. They want to make it as dead simple as go into drive.google.com and signing up for Google Docs. But absolutely, great examples if people are looking for what already exists in Wuala and Freenet. Good stuff. Got another email from James who says, hey guys, on your story about Yahoo having the most traffic on the web in July, you didn't mention Yahoo was expiring usernames unless people logged into Yahoo. Mm. They also opened up the expired usernames for the taking in July. I would think the expiring usernames would have caused the web traffic to be higher than usual, but the numbers for August will tell if it was only temporary. Great point, because the number was uniques, right?
Yeah, that's probably exactly what's going on.
That definitely has an effect, right?
Unless they secretly are rolled out GeoCities again and we didn't know about it.
If only.
Yeah,
I want my Athens site back. I was in the Athens neighborhood.
Well, then who are all those GeoCities people that heard about it?
Yeah. Secret testers.
No, James is right. I mean, they went to a massive number of people and said, hey, do you still want this Yahoo address? Probably got people to log in for the first time in a long time. That would drive your uniques number up. And he phrases it the right way. We won't know how much until August. We see if this falls back. So it'll be interesting to watch. Great email. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Lamar Wilson, for joining us today. YouTube.com/Lamar Wilson for all your stuff. Twit.tv/ is it?
YT.
TWI. It's just YT. Okay. YT. Twit.tv/YT. Anything else going on you want to tell folks about?
No. You know, you can follow me on Twitter or Google Plus. I do both of those pretty frequently. And I was just happy to be on. Going to enjoy the weekend and come back refreshed to do more tech stuff next week.
Excellent. Right. We have not forgotten about Len Peralta. You might have on the audio podcast, but those on the video have been watching his illustrations. Len, as usual, awesome stuff. Take us through what you drew today.
Thank you so much. Well, The big announcement, of course, with Steve Ballmer leaving Microsoft, a lot of speculation of who the new CEO will be. Well, I kind of did a mashup of news here. And the new next Microsoft CEO announced is, of course, Ben Affleck. What? Of course, the dude
from, why is he saying, hi, I was in Geely?
Geely, because that's the worst movie ever made.
In case you forgot who he was. But I did a little mashup there.
That's hilarious.
This is a pretty simple one. Apple buying Embark. You know, this week, it's funny, I've been using Waze ever since we talked about it on the show a couple weeks ago. And I'm interested to see what happens. I mean, this is kind of a neat little cartographer, Apple, sort of looking at what's going to happen in the future with the app. Hopefully, they'll get their act together.
Kind of a renaissance app.
Yes, exactly. Amazon Wireless. This was just kind of an interesting thing. What would Amazon Wireless look like? Well, this is what it would kind of look like. It's a little upside down Amazon. I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know about you.
Jeff Bezos.
I thought that was a pretty neat little take. It's going the wrong way, but it is, of course, Amazon branded. So right. Amazon Wireless, who knows? The a new kind of Pandora's box is opening. Of course, they're opening it up for 40 hours there at least. So that's kind of creepy and weird. Let's see. Oh, Lawrence Lessig, a little cartoon of Lawrence Lessig. He's going to be fighting the power. This is fight the power, Larry. Fight the powers that be by invoking a Public Enemy song, copyright 1989. And
you should definitely send that to Lawrence Lessig.
I should. And then finally, something you wrote in the show notes got me thinking about this one. It's a little bit abstract, but Google wants to be your dictionary. I thought Google wants to be my dictionary. What? I want to be your dictionary, baby. It's wearing a smoking jacket. Sort of smoking. Oh,
that,
wow.
that went to a whole different place than originally
let me define
intended.
Your words.
It's just, you know, so cool. I was running short on time, and I thought, this is very.
I like it. Hey, martini and a cigar.
I'm into alternative.
Come on over, Google.
If you know what I mean.
Tell me my etymology.
But do you see he's got the little G worked into his face there? I don't know. I thought that was great. Anyhow, but there you go. Those are the tech stories of the day, drawn by me.
Excellent. LenPeralta.com, the place to find Len Peraltartsy. And we have a bit.ly link, right? Bit.ly,
yes.
bit.ly/twitlen.
Yes, exactly. And you can follow me at Len Peralta. I'll also put a link in the chat room, and they can choose which one should go into the online store.
You know, because we have the screenshot up, and it's still the Google Dictionary. It's almost like you've become the Google Dictionary. And
I am him. Hey, baby, what's happening? How you doing?
You can also find a link to Len's drawings at the top of our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's a place where you can not only get that, but links from all of the audience, thousands of people in there submitting links. You can do it too, and you should definitely be voting on the links that are submitted so that we know what stories you're most interested in. It helps us create our lineup every day. technewstoday.reddit.com. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us tnt@twit.tv and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We will be back on Monday with Randall Bennett as our guest. Ayaz will still be off, but it'll be fine. Don't worry. He'll be back Tuesday. We'll see you Monday.